Hello, I'm Stephanie Lemick, and this is Building Trauma-Informed Workplaces. I am super excited to have another amazing guest joining us today, who is an author and someone who has created something pretty darn cool that I'm really super excited to have a chance to dive in to and chat more. Kelly, welcome to the podcast. I always love to let folks introduce themselves and share a little bit more with our listeners. Love to have you do the same.
I would love to, but first I want to say thank you so much for having me on today. I really, man, I'm such a believer and supporter of all the great stuff you put in the world. So it's such an honor to be here and to get to share everything I'm doing with your listeners. But my career path really was shaped all the way back from when I was just a kid. And I was growing up experiencing what my mother was experiencing in her work life. And then I went on my own kind of crazy journey experiencing ill-being at work as well, which is why today I have such a passion for creating well-being at work. So I'm the CEO and co-founder of Motives Met, which empowers people to create their best work life and workplace with true well-being. I am also the author of the best-selling book, Work Life Well Lived, which was just published about 2 months ago now, which is kind of wild. So that's been an interesting journey. But before I started Motives Met, I was really on this path to help people thrive in their lives, both in and outside of work, because I had developed such kind of a passion and a calling for it. So my background is in human behavior research, so conducting quantitative research to really understand why we do what we do, why sometimes don't we do the things we want to do, and how do we develop frameworks and models to better understand both ourselves and kind of the world around us. But all of that research led me to kind of want to understand stuff on a deeper level. So that brought me to stuff like cognitive behavioral therapy, getting certified in psychological safety, becoming a meditation teacher, using mindfulness practices. So I developed a coaching practice where I was focusing on things like stress and burnout and mind management. And interestingly, a lot of what people were bringing to me was stuff related to their work life, their struggles as a leader or an entrepreneur or with their team. And it was at about 2017 when my research team and I were just talking, and we were like, man, it's so awesome that well-being and work are being used like in the same sentence. That was not a thing not that long ago. But then we wondered, well, why is stuff still so dang bad? Why is stress and burnout so high? Why are things like retention and happiness so low? And this was prior to the pandemic. And even our research today at Motives Met shows only 16% of people are thriving at work. So we were like, man, I wonder what we could do to change this. And we just kind of were getting curious. And where we really started was with this simple but profound question of, well, what even is it? Like, what is work well-being? And we figured out the world actually had no dang idea. And that actually a lot of what we've been taught about health and happiness at work is wrong. So that really led us on this wild research journey to uncover the truth. And our research is the foundation for our whole platform that we built at Motives Met. So we really wanted to take all of this rich data and these insights, but make it actionable, give people real tools to empower themselves. So we developed our human needs assessment. We have a whole framework around what a thriving culture actually is, human connection software and workshops. And I'm sure we'll talk more about this stuff, but we really wanted to give people tangible things that would enable them to create a better collective work world for everybody.
Absolutely. We will definitely talk more. We were chatting just very briefly before we started the recording, and the Motives Met assessment and platform is so cool. It's so awesome. It is unique. It is applicable. Like, I'm thinking about how I'm going to use my report to plan for the back half of the year already. And that is so impactful. I'm sure we'll share more about what that looks like, how folks can do it shortly. But I want to pick up on something you mentioned as you were introducing yourself, because I was actually just talking about this last week with our guest, Jessica Winder, about how a parent, how their work life can impact a child's work life. And there's a lot of really interesting research and data. There's a great book called Work Matters, and it's all about how parents' work lives impact children. And even childhood experiences of trauma, unfortunately. But if you would like to share, I would love to hear a little bit more about, you know, how your mom's experience or experiences at work kind of played into your, you know, your development or your, you know, purpose as you're looking at building out your work you've been doing.
Well, I think that what you just said is spot on, and I am totally living, breathing proof of it. My mom was just this badass woman trailblazer, and I admired her so much. She was one of the first VPs in her company. She was senior vice president of research at one of the largest global advertising agencies. So to me, she was just like the epitome of success. And over time, I really saw what that quote unquote success cost her. And at one point, it was really unique because I saw her go from thriving at work to ill being at work. So I saw really both sides of the coin. I saw early on how much confidence and joy and purpose work gave my mom. And then I saw that it became the thing that was destroying her. Her company was bought out, and it was always a tough job. And she always felt she had to do more and prove more as a woman. And it was tough hours, and it wasn't easy. But a lot of her needs at one point were well met. She was working with amazing people. She had an amazing boss. She was able to innovate and create. There were all these great benefits. It wasn't perfect, but it was pretty darn good. And then when the company was bought out, she got a new passive aggressive boss. People were leaving left and right. They were either being fired or they were running out the door themselves. And being the sole breadwinner of three children, she felt really stuck. And she couldn't even really work on getting out of that situation because the work piled on her was so insane. And I kind of share this story in the book, which I know you've read, but there's this one day that I can so vividly remember where I come downstairs in the morning before school, and I am like literally in shock that my mom is making pancakes. Like my jaws dropped. Like, I'm like, what the hell is going on? And my mom's kind of laughing because, you know, my mom didn't have time to be a pancake flipper before school. She was gone for work. She was frantically getting ready to leave for work. And she was like, well, you know, I pulled an all-nighter for work and I just thought I deserved a break to make you pancakes. I haven't gotten to go to bed yet. And, you know, that's that mindset that we need to shift in our culture, right? It's that idea that we have to earn well-being at work, right? I still vividly remember that she said, I deserved a break. And that was so kind of sad to me as I think about it now. So it was such a struggle to see my mom go through that as a kid and to hear her get physically sick before work. I mean, literally it was that bad to see her cry, to see her give her all and then be treated this way. So even though I knew it was so wrong, I still had kind of had ingrained in me that like, this is how it was, you know, and you just had to toughen up and power through.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, an unfortunately common story we hear when we talk about, you know, people's workplaces or work experiences. I mean, I hear that story. I love the pancake story in the book. I remember moments in my own career where I'm like, why did this job that I loved all of a sudden become something that is just making me feel sick to my stomach or burnt out or exhausted? And this approach in terms of those motivations, those needs being fulfilled, is something that I feel like has not been well explored prior to the work you've been doing. So I'm really fascinated. I think it is super interesting. And I think it's something almost all of us have experienced, that sense, like you say, of ill-being at work and how it seeps into almost every other aspect of life as well.
Yeah. I mean, it just, work life is kind of what we always say at Motives Met. So, you know, inevitably, if you're having stress and problems at work, it's going to bleed into your life outside of work and then the lives of those around you, right? Your family, your friends, your loved ones, our communities. So it's really, you know, we say that ill-being doesn't just affect the individual, even though that's reason enough, but it really affects everybody. It creates this ripple effect into the world. And so it's really a huge problem.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of the book, I have to talk about it. I can't believe it's only been out for 2 months. Like, it is so fantastic. I would love to hear more about, you know, how you decided to write it, you know, who you hope reads it, what you hope folks get out of it, and just hear a little more of that and get our listeners interested in seeing if it's maybe right for them to pick up. Spoiler alert, I think it is worth you picking up. Otherwise, Kelly wouldn't be joining us. But I want you to share a little bit more.
This is true. Yeah, no, I would love to. I know. I can't believe, I mean, it took 2.5 years to write it. And the research that went into this started back in 2017, as I said. So it's been a really long journey to get here. But, you know, I don't even know what it was. But just one day I was like, you know, all the research we've done, all the stuff we've built, it is a book. It just is one. And I felt like we were such a disruptor in kind of the whole health and happiness at work category. And the way to really create the biggest impact was going to be by writing this book. Even though some people thought I was crazy, even though it was like, this is going to be a long road, even though it was like, man, you know, when you just feel like you have to do something, I really felt like this was something I had to do. In the book, I share the 10 dream killers, as you know, that threaten what we call the attainable dream of a work life well lived, right? There are these obstacles in the way of creating the work worlds that everybody desires and deserves, from leaders down to employees. And there's this great quote that what stands in the way becomes the way. So first thing is we kind of have to figure out what's wrong, what are we up against, and then we can start to move our way through. And so we've developed, we call our no BS 5-step pathway to well-being at work, that when we walk this pathway together, that is what is going to help us eliminate these dream killers that stop everybody from having the work world that we want to have. And in the book, I share all of our research around what thriving at work actually is and what it isn't. Actually, one of the first publishers I worked with told me, maybe I shouldn't be so bold. I didn't end up staying with that publisher. This was one of the reasons. Because I do, I call out the who, what, when, and why, and of why we get work well-being wrong. And, you know, they were like, you're kind of calling out some big stuff, some big people. You sure you want to do that? And I was like, you know, I'm happy I stuck with it because I think everybody has good intentions, but we need to really uncover why we've been getting it wrong so that we can get it right.
Yes.
And there are a lot of different obstacles, but one of the big ones that I kind of touched on is the fact that we don't have shared meaning and mindset around what things like mental health, happiness, thriving at work truly is, right? And goal clarity equals goal achievement. So if we want to have well-being at work, then we have to all have that same goal and have that clarity. And there is so much dang noise out there in the world to navigate through. And that was, I found so frustrating when we started on this journey. You know, one social media influencer is telling you, it's about hustling to reach your potential. And a different one's like, no, 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 screw the hustle. It's about work-life balance. Mm-hmm. It's about working remote with a margarita at the pool. That's the key to it all. And then, you know, there's all the, I could have filled up my own dang book just with research that says like, employees want purpose. No, it's about appreciation. No, the number one reason they leave is because of lack of growth opportunities. No, it's because of a bad boss. And it's like, what are you really supposed to do with all that? If you're a leader who wants your team to be happy and want them to want to work for you, if you want to be happier in your own work life, you're kind of like, well, what am I supposed to do with all of this stuff? And it's not that there isn't some benefit to it, but we need a way to kind of organize, prioritize, and simplify it in a way that actually helps us. Because we felt like we're just drowning in information, but starving for real wisdom. And what we discovered from all of our work is essentially that there's 28 motives, the psychological, emotional, and social needs that are at the heart of what being a human being with well-being at work is all about. And in the book, I share the framework, I share these different motives, but, you know, for example, work-life harmony, purpose, growth, innovation, variety, these are all motives at work. But what we also discovered from our research that's huge is that what you need most to thrive at work, Stephanie, is going to be different than what I need most. So that we're all going to have different motives that rise to the top in importance and influence. And to be honest, some motives that we kind of don't care that much about. And what I maybe don't care that much about, what doesn't drive me, could be completely what drives you. So that's why we developed our human needs assessment, to uncover people's top five motives driving their ability to be well and perform well at work today, and to give leaders a tool to understand their people at that individualized level, because well-being is personal. A one-size-fits-all approach just doesn't work. So with the book, you get a free code to get to take the assessment. So what I love hearing from readers is that they can go on this personal journey when reading the book, because they take the assessment, they uncover their top five motives, and then I walk you through those five steps on the pathway to understand, be mindful of, evaluate, communicate, and then ultimately meet these motives for yourself, the people you work with, and the people that you lead. So to your question of like, who is this book for? I broke this book out into three parts, focusing on you as the individual, then on kind of work relationships and interpersonal dynamics, and then lastly on leadership and culture. Because at the end of the day, we really try to drive home the idea that well-being is co-created. The degree any of these motives are going to thrive or be only barely surviving is going to be dependent on everybody. So we got to walk this path together.
Absolutely. A couple of things just so stand out to me. Number one, kudos to you for not, you know, backing off, being bold. I think it's so important. I think it's how we end up with so many things being watered down and not really what we're looking for. You know, a lot of listeners will know, you know, my story with the wounded workforce and work around building trauma-informed workplaces came from a desire to read a book about trauma-informed workplaces and an inability to find it because people are watering down the concept or, you know, piecemealing it. And it's because people don't want to use the word trauma or talk about trauma. And I mean, sometimes we just have to talk about what things are. I also love what you say about co-creating well-being, because I think this is another really key point from the book, from your work, that a lot of well-being, mental health at work, it's wrong. We'll focus on the individual and actions an individual can take, and then organizational actions around programs or processes. And there's like, how are the two kind of working together? How are they combining to review and address well-being for everyone? That is, like you said, very individual. I absolutely love this. So interesting. I want to share with you, if you're okay with it, what my top five motives are.
Yes, I would love to.
Okay. I was very excited and also not surprised at all. So my number one motive is purpose. Probably not super surprising, given the work I'm doing. Okay. Innovation is next. Variety. Flexibility. And autonomy.
Top five. You have two of mine as well. Flexibility and autonomy we overlap on. Yeah. For sure. Those are in our freedom domain, as we call it. Yes. I'm like a freedom kind of gal. I'm like, I need to feel empowered. I need self-determination. And I can see that we would vibe on that.
Yes. Yeah. We're like, yeah, be bold. Like you go do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And it's so interesting. And I mean, I also think as I was taking the assessment, I was reflecting on, you know, certainly I'm in this moment of entrepreneurship in my life, and then also other moments in my career that were different. This is so, like, I wish I had this for every person who ever reported to me, because it is so amazing. Because I think for me, innovation, variety, flexibility, very like kind of loosey-goosey personality over here, which I am. And if someone needs, you know, structure, security, we're on, like you said, we're not kind of doing the same things naturally. That might not be important to me, and it's really important to others. So I just love that insight. And then there's, y'all, you get your report and it is literally like 20 plus pages just for your top five of information. And it is so, it's so interesting. It's so amazing. It's also very pretty, which, you know, kudos to you guys for that. But I just think it is so fantastic. And so I know you mentioned I am in the freedom domain. We share the freedom domain.
Yep.
And so I also hit the meaning and stimulation domain, which is fun. The others are, it looks like advancement, company connection, success, significance, personal connection, comfort, and balance. And like, you know, you talk about the 28 different motives. The domains do make it a little bit easier as you think about your teams, thinking about managing or leading. I do think that that's really helpful to have those specifics within the groups too. So you can go, okay, Stephanie is very into freedom and stimulation.
Yeah.
And understanding that.
Yeah. And just having that framework, you know, again, I was like, I would get so frustrated researching all the information in the world. And I was like, the type A person in me was like, give me some structure here that we can follow. So even though I'm throwing out 28, which can seem like a lot, we have this great framework where if you go to our website, you can see it. It's colored and it's animated. It makes it really easy to kind of grasp this, because that makes it a lot easier to have, like you were saying, that shared language, that shared understanding, to kind of have this map. You know, we kind of call it our motive map. And when you take the assessment, you get to see where you fall on the map and how you're different or similar than others. And teams love to see where their team falls. So, you know, if like a team of 15 doesn't, we do a workshop, it's cool. They can kind of see what's rising the top of their team and then kind of talk about individuals and how they're similar or different. And that's pretty cool. But like you were saying, we really, again, are so about giving people the tools to take action. So in your report, we help you develop your well-being action plan. We help you create what we call your motive story, because we all have a story behind these needs, why they're so important to us. You know, the degree that they're healthy or maybe not so healthy right now, the ways we need them supported with the people we work with. And when we share these stories, we connect as humans. We don't just connect as our work selves. We connect as our human selves. And you just see a total energy shift in a room when people who work together talk about these things, because I don't think I've actually ever been with a team that says they've had any type of conversation like it before. Oh,
I believe it. I do. I think this is unlike anything that is available out there in the best way. You know, former HR executive, I can tell you all sorts of assessments you could do with your teams. And, you know, pros and cons of every one. One thing that constantly comes up for me is it's either too generic, where you're really not individualizing things enough for that unique person and what their needs are at work, what their needs are in life, or it's really complex and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know how to create a shared language around this. This feels like a lot of work, especially as a manager and leader. So I love how thoughtful you were about creating something that's individualized, but also is very thoughtful about shared language. And one thing that's very powerful to me, as I think about trauma-informed workplaces, is when we focus on personality assessments, It's very like internal. I think certainly, you know, there's value to them. I'm a big fan of Clifton Strengths, for example. There's value to them for tools. When we talk about motivations and how we can help and shape people, I also think motivations help us better understand potential trauma responses or potential triggers for individuals in a way where we're having a safe conversation with a full team about our needs and our motivations. because if someone needs autonomy, I'll raise my hand. Someone needs autonomy. You know, part of that is a need for freedom that comes from my own unique traumatic experiences, my own unique responses. Very similarly, someone who needs security or that comfort, that sense of safety, that could be something connecting back to a traumatic experience. What's beautiful about this is I've said it probably and will keep saying it until I'm blue in the face. We never ask people to disclose their trauma. We never, you know, kind of push them to share their stories. And then the next question I get is, well, okay, Stephanie, but then how can I make sure that I'm supporting them in the right way? And I love this because it's such a powerful tool that gets to the heart of what your team member needs without making them feel like they have to share something that they're not comfortable sharing. It's really amazing tool, super powerful, especially as I think about incorporating it into a trauma-informed organization.
Yeah, I love just so much of what you just said. I've just been like nodding my head because I'm just like, yes, yes, yes. And the timing is like impeccable because I just wrote an article yesterday that's going to go out tomorrow about the power of sharing our histories. Yes. And how we've reflected on our team at Motives Med of how that's one of the biggest takeaways that we've been hearing from leaders and teams is that when you share your history, the good, bad, and ugly, oh my goodness, so much comes from that. I mean, so much that I could talk so much about. But there was a workshop literally 2 weeks ago where one person shared why belonging and fairness were top motives for her. And she shared the workplace she came from. And she'd only been on this team for like 3 or 4 months. And you could just feel like everybody on pins and needles just listening to her story and her explain the toxicity that she came from, the unfairness that she came from, the need to conform that she came from. And she also followed it up with saying, I've never felt so comfortable so quick on a team ever. Aww. And thank you everyone for making me feel that way. There was just, everybody was like, oh my God. And then other people started opening up. And then there was the conversation of, we want our team to be different. We don't want to be like other teams out there. And hey, we don't think we are, but let's also talk about what we could do better on when it comes to these two motives, because we're not perfect. And you know, like, let's make sure we're talking about that too. But there is so much power when we share our stories. And within our stories is woven that history. And it is those work wounds from our past, like you're saying, that we all have. And when we understand someone's history and where they've come from, that is how we can grow our compassion and our relationships and our depth of familiarity and be more human with one another. So, I mean, it's so, so, so important. But at the same time, it's really kind of, you don't usually just walk up to a coworker and go, hey, do you want to tell me about your past like work history trauma, or like as a new boss, like, hey, why don't you just tell me what you hated about your last job or any trauma you have?
Right.
When you use our assessment, that's one of the really beautiful things, is it opens the door for these conversations to be normal. It creates a place for them to happen, which is the first step of it all.
Oh, it's so amazing. So great. If a leader, a manager wanted to explore use, I mean, we are teeing them up to desperately want to use this. So how could they? How can someone integrate the Motives Met pathway? How can they use these assessments in the best way for their team? What's your recommendation? What's your ideal approach?
Well, we've really tried to build on to the assessment based on what we've heard from different teams and leaders we've worked with. So we created our assessment, and that is, like I said, it's the door opener. We say it's kind of like the first place to start. And when you use the assessment, now you're actually coaching and training and getting people to go, okay, when we think about creating a people first culture, guys, this is what we're talking about. We're talking about these 28 needs. And we're going to hold everybody accountable to show up and honor, protect, and strengthen them, because we got to co-create this together. We have to respect motive diversity, right? So you're laying the groundwork for all of that really important stuff that without developing the motives mindset, as we call it, nothing else really matters. So the assessment's really kind of that big first step to doing that stuff. But then it's like, okay, now let's get together as a team. Let's share these motive stories. Let's also look at the strengths, weakness, opportunities. Let's look at the builders and blockers to these. Where do we do well as a team and an organization with each of these motives? And where don't we do so well? So it's amazing when you get your leaders, you get your people together in a room to talk about that and brainstorm, the ideas that come out of that are amazing. So most people who work with us want to do a workshop of some sorts where we're going to dive into that kind of stuff. But depending on goals and objectives, you know, what you focus on can be different. But there's a lot of different exercises and activities and learnings in an interactive way that can come out of the assessment that's really unique and different, like you said, than anything else that's out there. But a recent thing we created that a lot of leaders wanted from us was a human connection software, which is what we call it, because they said, hey, we want to continue these conversations with our employees. We want to give our managers, especially newer managers, a tool to make them feel like they know what to do, right? Because it's great to say, get to know your people as human, you know, coach them, make sure they're happy. But how, right? You're not given really the tools or direction to do that. So we actually built a software that adds on to the assessment. You know, you get a fancy dashboard, you get your report, you get all this stuff, but the software is super cool in the sense that I would pull up your results, Stephanie, and I'd go, okay, this is what matters most to Stephanie. I'm going to set up a one-on-one with Stephanie just to talk to her about her health and happiness at work. That's it. Not to-dos, not projects, just connect as a human being. That's it. And I'm going to ask her really good questions as it relates to these different needs she has at work. And they're right here in front of me in the software. So Stephanie, how much of your day do you spend on purpose versus off purpose and why? How healthy do you feel your purpose is at work? What's one change you would make on our team so that we could innovate better and it would better meet your innovation motive? So it's because it's great to ask employees if they're happy or not. But I mean, even with a great deal of psychological safety, it's really tough to kind of get answers there. And sometimes people don't even quite know exactly why they're not super satisfied.
Right. It's when you ask like, hey, are you happy? Happy is such a generic, like that's such a generic question.
Right.
Generic answer back. And I love what you're saying about the human connection dashboard. I am obsessed because managers' jobs are so hard.
So hard.
And they're so hard. And so frequently, we're asking them to do really important things and have a really big impact on the day-to-day experience of their team members. We don't give them the tools and resources to actually make that happen. So I love what you're describing is this makes it something easy for the manager to do. And it gives a very tailored set of tools and resources to have these conversations and supports instead of going, you know, saying, hey, you should be concerned about your employees' mental health and well-being. Here's what mental health and well-being is. Good luck with that. I mean, that's what a lot of organizations do. Here's the definition of that. Go do something about that. That's not helpful. And I think it's part of the reason we see such high rates of burnout for managers, especially at the mid-level manager level, is they need the supports to do the things they should be doing to support their teams. So I love the dashboard. That sounds phenomenal.
Yeah, your explanation of that was just impeccable. I mean, I was like laughing to myself because, and I remember being there too with Zaleer. I have so much to do. I want my team to be happy. And it's like, yeah, let's just go on a webinar and talk about, you know, why the happiness of your team matters and what it, you know, what it is and very loose to-dos. And then that's it. And then now you just go on your way and go back to kind of your full calendar of things. So it's kind of like, yeah, give people a tool to set them up for success, to set their team up for success, your culture up for success. So it's, you know, it makes it foolproof on a silver platter. And what's really cool is the leader and the manager is being coached as they're creating these communication guides because they're going through each of these needs and they're reflecting on the questions and how am I supporting that? How is that going on my team? And they're putting their coaching hat on and their motivational hat on. and developing these communication guides and then sending it to the employee to think about, and then they go have a one-on-one. And if you do that 2 to 4 times a year, you would have so many less exit interviews. Yeah. So have the stay interviews. That's what he's doing. Have the stay interviews. Do this process. Have the stay interviews. And then you're not going to have the exit interviews. Because 33% of employees said that in the last year, no one has talked to them, had a one-on-one conversation, and 31% said only once about the needs that are driving their happiness at work, which is a startling statistic.
It's believable. I mean, I'm not surprised at all. I am sad, but I'm not surprised.
Yeah, you're right. Surprised. It's sad.
It's sad.
Not for both ends, because it's tough for leaders, and turnover costs are expensive. I mean, it's nobody wins. You know, it's one of those things where nobody wins. So how do you get more strategic and better at this whole well-being thing than just, hey, it's great. Again, we were like, it's great. We're talking about it. But that's the problem, is we're not taking action in the right way. And we don't have the right tools in place to take the right action. And that really holds us back.
And I love too how realistic this is. 2 to 4 times a year, having these conversations with your team, and you have the tools to guide you in those conversations to make them most successful. I feel like that is doable. Even moving from no times a year to 2 times a year, or 1 times a year to 4 times a year, I think you can have that ask for managers. Show them what it looks like. And they go, oh, I can do this. And I think then they start doing it and they say, oh, this actually helps my team and I do my job better. I'm like, wow. Because so often there used to be a joke in an organization I was in where there would be new programs or processes that would come out from corporate, and someone nicknamed them unfunded initiatives, where you didn't have the time or the resources to actually do these things. That stuck with me, because it's like, we do. We ask people to add all of these things onto their day job. Do they see the benefit? Does it make their job easier? How does it actually fit in? And this just dovetails in beautifully. And I think it's something where you'd see a really immediate impact on how well you understand yourself and how well you understand your team.
Yeah, no, for sure. And just, I mean, at the simplest level, when you do this type of thing with your employees, you know, even if you can't use our assessment and you were just going to go really try to have a conversation about it, when you do that, you are showing your employees you really care about their well-being, and you're not just saying you do.
Right.
So, and that in and of itself goes a long way, because as you said, we try to take a very realistic approach to all of this. Because there is, quite frankly, just a lot of BS out there in so many ways. So many people want to paint, hey, just do these like 5 things. That's the answer. You know, if you just focus on this, that's going to be great. We say like, no, the ugly truth of work well-being is it's messy. It's multifaceted. It's personal, and it evolves. And these 28 needs hold friction with one another. In our framework, needs that are on opposite ends hold more tension. So, you know, flexibility and peer connection, they're on opposite ends for a reason. Security and innovation, on opposite ends for a reason. So it's about learning to live in the friction of these needs well and doing it together. Not pretending there isn't any friction, but dealing with it head on, being able to communicate about this stuff, bringing it to the surface so that you can be strategic about it, compromise where you need to compromise, and actually have an action plan around it. Because that's when you do that, then you have power over it. But when you kind of pretend that it's just going to be this simple, things should just work and be easy and perfect, that actually really sets you up for failure in a much bigger way.
Absolutely. I am a huge fan of this. I am super excited to see some of the results teams are having as they use this framework, as they work through it, because I think it is spectacularly impactful. This is something you can do as an individual as well. You know, I mentioned earlier, I'm ready to like pull out my report and use it as I'm reflecting on the second half of 2024. So I'd love to hear from you, you know, how you envision an individual who's really interested, wants to learn more, wants to take an assessment. What would you recommend the best way to get started is?
Well, like I said, when you purchase the book, you get the free code. So, you know, I think that's always the best because you get more of that rich information to take that deeper journey. But when you take the assessment, ultimately, we're giving you a lot of information in that report, but what it really ladders up to that's in there is developing your own personal well-being action plan. And even if you are a leader, like you said, you know, I'm such a believer that it starts with you first. Yeah. So even if you want to create well-being on your team, if you want to create a great culture, all that's great, but you have to start with you first. So really going inwards and understanding your motives and why they matter to you and looking at where they're at is going to put you in a better position to be able to lead others. So I think that's super important. But developing the action plan to me is where it all really comes to life, right? Because then we're starting to put real tangible to-dos that can make a difference. And sometimes that's just actually acknowledging and celebrating when stuff's going like really well. It's knowing like, hey, these are my five motives and they are crushing it. So I'm really doing well in my work life and here's why, and I know exactly why. So I'm going to celebrate that. I'm going to safeguard that, right? I'm going to make sure like, ooh, what do I need to keep an eye on? I'm going to make sure I check in, but that can be part of it too. But obviously if some of your motives are not doing so hot, it's really important for you to take a proactive approach and not a reactive approach because prevention is better than cure, right? Like we want to start going, how are we going to elevate these needs? So as part of that report process, it's looking at each of those five motives and going, how healthy are they? I'm going to kind of rate them, engage them. And then I'm going to look at motives that are weaker and go, what needs to change? And we kind of outline in the report the different ways to think about it. But we say that motives are met both in action and thought. So sometimes elevating a motive is around your mindset, your attitude, your belief system. I've worked with a lot of people who've had to really change their mindset around work-life harmony. I really had to change my mindset around security. It was one of my top motives when I was starting Motives Met. My own assessment kicked my ass in the best way. It was I helped build the algorithm and I knew autonomy and flexibility would be in my top five because I'm a freedom gal, but I was not guessing security. And the reason it was there was it was super weak. I was scared. I was leaving all of this great stuff I had built behind. And I realized I don't need security to be a 10 out of 10. Because if it is, then I'm probably not working towards my big goals that I want, which was one of my other motives. But I went, I don't want it to be so weak. And I have this mindset work to do. So, you know, when you're kind of developing your action plan, we give you these different buckets, you know, mindset, small to do, big to do, what support system do you need? So I think we make it really easy for you to kind of go through and start to develop something tangible, which I've heard time and time again is so helpful because I've been there and I know a lot of people who've been there where you just are kind of like, man, either I'm miserable and I feel stuck or even like, not maybe miserable, but like, I feel like it could be better, but where do I go from here? What do I do next? You know, and that's what we want to help people with. This tool is what my mom and I say we wish we had had when we were just drowning in misery so many years ago. We're like, how do we pay it forward and give people this tool to make sure what happened to us doesn't happen to them?
Absolutely. I love it so much. Kelly, thank you so much for writing the book. Thank you so much for all of this work you're doing. I am a huge fan. I can't wait to see, you know, how this all blows up and makes a huge impact in the world of work. I'm so excited for you. I would love if you would share, you know, for our listeners, we certainly have your website and a link to purchase the book in the show notes, but where else can folks find you and follow along with your awesome work?
Well, I'm very active on LinkedIn, Kelly Mackin, and also Instagram, where it's KellyMackin_MotivesMet. And you can also sign up for our newsletter as well on our website.
Amazing. Perfect. It's a great newsletter. I do subscribe and it is well worth it. It's one of the newsletters that shows up in my inbox that I actually read. So
thank you, Stephanie. Absolutely. Kind.
Of course. Kelly, thank you so very much for the work you're doing and for joining us on the podcast. I know this is such impactful work and is so helpful And it is certainly a tool and resource that I think helps us build trauma-informed workplaces as well. So always excited to see something like this launch. And I am such an advocate to see this continue to grow and expand to other organizations. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thank you again for all the work you do. I feel like we have such synergistic,
yes,
you know, goals and impacts, and, you know, it's really great. So super honored to be here today.
Absolutely. Thank you everyone for joining us today. Until next time, be well.